Hello, I'm Dr. Roger Steiner, director of the Gavin Herbert Eye Institute and professor and chair of ophthalmology at the University of California, Irvine. Welcome to Medscape Ophthalmology Insights, coming from the American Academy of Ophthalmology meeting in Chicago. Joining me today is Dr. Barry Cooperman. Dr. Cooperman is chief of the retina service in the Department of Ophthalmology at the Gavin Herbert Eye Institute, University of California, Irvine. We're going to be discussing overall highlights in the retina and retinal disease area from this year's meeting. First, Barry, tell me about this new combination therapy, Fovista, and what that's doing for us.
Well, it's an interesting study that was presented by Praveen Dugal on Saturday at the subspecialty day. Fovista is an anti-PDGF, platelet-derived growth factor agent, and it was used in combination with anti-VEGF therapy. You know, we have three choices of anti-VEGF therapy between Eylea, also known as aflibercept, Lucentis, known as ranibizumab, and Avastin, bevacizumab. But there's a wall that we've hit with that. We've helped so many patients. We're grateful for all those compounds. But we've discovered that if we give more of the same drug, it doesn't really help more people or doesn't get a better result. So we're looking for combination therapeutic strategies. And Fovista, which is this anti-PDGF, was given on a monthly basis together with Lucentis. And in their fairly large phase two, as a 450-plus patient study, they showed a significant increased likelihood of getting good vision, 62% increase. So it's really quite significant. So it really excited us. It's still a phase two. We have to do more work. Phase three is still coming. But again, this is our first sense of combination therapeutic approaches can really be of benefit to our patients. So it's an exciting new chapter that's beginning to open.
Yeah, move anti-VEGF on. That's
yeah,
great.
Well, still anti-VEGF will be a keystone to this approach, but it's in combination now with another agent.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And then a potential new therapy for central serous retinopathy.
Yeah, this is some very clever work from Francine Behar-Cohen, who runs she's a very creative scientist and retina specialist in France. And she has a large laboratory that has been focused a lot on steroids, but most of the time has been looking at a lot of glucocorticoids, but she's now looking at mineralocorticoid steroids and has discovered that they may be involved in the pathway that leads to central serous retinopathy, which is a breakdown and there's leakage in the subretinal space, but we don't really have a treatment for it. Ironically, it's frequently precipitated by stress, but one of the systemic agents that it can cause it is corticosteroids, the classic steroids. Ironically, she feels that understanding this mineral corticoid pathway better, that she's come up with a therapeutic approach using spironolactone systemically, a long-standing drug that's been around. She was able to show in a significant number of patients that she can resolve the leak and improve vision. So it's a brand new, based on it's going directly from science to a therapeutic approach all by the same person in the same laboratory. It's really quite clever.
Now, we've been hearing for a couple of years about stem cells and the potential for reversing some retinal damage and macular degeneration and things like retinitis pigmentosa. What's the latest on stem cells?
Well, there's a study that's going on, and Alan Ho presented this also at Subspecialty Day. It's a Johnson & Johnson, also a Janssen product. It's a stem cells that are derived from umbilical cords, and it's being injected subretinally with a sort of a clever device, an eye science device that tracks underneath the retina to deliver the stem cells to the macular area. But importantly, what he's describing is that this generation of stem cells are not really designed to yet integrate into the retina. They may do so in a partial fashion, but they're not really regrowing retina. What they are young, healthy cells that can deliver trophic factors to a disease state environment. And so they already have over a dozen patients. They're seeing some nice signs of visual improvement in eyes that were thought not to be capable of improving. So it's just the beginning of the stem cell era. And again, this seems to be associated with using stem cells as trophic drug delivery agents, essentially. But it's exciting new work, and they're making good progress, and they're opening up more sites and having more patients enrolled. So we should learn a lot more in the near future.
Yeah, it's interesting that this is emerging as an unexpected benefit of stem cells.
Right.
You know, Dr. Henry Claassen, as you know from our department, has been finding similar things with his work on stem cells. And then there's a whole Alzheimer research group that, again, is using stem cells not to create new brain cells, but to rescue the cells that we have with these trophic factors. So I think it's going to be a whole new.
You're right, though. It's still the challenge of stem cells is still quite daunting, but we didn't expect that we'd get this break that instead of having to rebuild the whole thing, we can just make the environment a little healthier with the young, healthy cells.
Yeah, yeah. Now, what about drug delivery in the retina?
Yeah, so there was an interesting presentation also at the Retina Subspecialty Day by Anat Lowenstein of Israel, where it's a device that I think was developed by Gene Dewan in San Francisco. Gene has been very clever. He's a retina specialist based out of UCSF in Palo Alto and has developed a lot of products. But this is a stent that goes in with a reservoir. The issue is, of course, is that we're in the era of pharmacotherapy for retinal diseases, and so many patients now have to come in every month to get an injection, and it's a very effective therapeutic strategy, but we like to minimize the burden of treatment if possible while still having good results. So this is one approach, the first one that's really gotten this far, where there's good human data for with over a year's worth of data, where they have this reservoir with a chronic indwelling catheter, and they're able to refill that reservoir, it's sutured to the eye wall, and they're able to, they have data that they have now of more than a year's worth of results showing good control of the choroidal neovascularization associated with macular degeneration. So it's, again, the first of the long-term therapeutic strategies. So this era of injections will eventually come to an end, as it turns out that many of these drug delivery strategies are going to be considered new drugs, so they have to go through rigorous long-term testing. But at the end of the day, we're going to eventually not be doing so many intravitreal injections, and we'll have more long-term delivery strategies, and this is one of the first of those.
How do they control the delivery, though, with this reservoir?
Yeah, it wasn't. There's ways to control it. There's a little bolus of drug that goes in the beginning, and they have ways to control its ability, but I wasn't clear to me exactly how that's being done. I do know, for example, that Mark Humayun, who ironically was Gene Dewan's partner, both at, I think, going back a number of years, but including most recently at Doheny, has a separate drug delivery company using a stent that does have microprocessor controls and can control the release rate. His company is called Replenish. So that's a similar sort of technology. There'll be other things, microspheres, all the big drug companies that have products, anti-VEGF, certainly Regeneron and for sure Genentech, are looking at how to sort of advance their franchise by having long-term drug delivery strategies. So we'll be hearing more and more about this. But this is the first time we've seen any data from any of these approaches.
Wow. So insulin pumps for the eye.
It's exactly the analogy.
Yeah. So what about, I know watching you and your patients has been this whole issue about endophthalmitis prophylaxis and antibiotics with all of these injections. What's the anything about that at the Academy?
Yeah, it was very interesting. There was a session today where some researchers from Stony Brook in Toronto looked at an interesting question. There's still a source of controversy. Is there any benefit to using antibiotic drops for 3 days after every monthly injection that we give of anti-VEGF? It's clear that betadine, povidone, iodine is key to antisepsis. So every eye gets treated with that prior to an injection. The question is anything else necessary at all, or is it all silly? And the retina community is divided, though. The pendulum is swinging against the use of these antibiotic drops, but many people still use them. So what they did was look at the flora and the fornix, and they would swab the conge before any betadine went on the eye on a monthly basis and culture that. Patients were then randomized to either receiving no antibiotic drops or receiving, in this case, antibiotic drops moxifloxacin. And then they looked for progressive resistance to moxifloxacin, and in fact, after 4 months, they did find that. So in fact, by doing this topical antibiotic prophylaxis, we may be breeding resistant organisms, which may be more problematic. So their recommendation at the end of that is it should not be, that's a strategy that should not be utilized. But it was a very interesting way to go about it because the endophthalmitis rates are so low, about 1 in 3,000, that it's very hard to show that you're reducing or anything. But this is a way to sort of scientifically show that you may be breeding organisms, may be increasing the risk, not decreasing the risk by using antibiotics on a prophylactic basis.
That would not be surprising, would it?
Right. Right. But it's surprising that you could see it within 4 months. I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah, clever germs.
Yeah.
So, Rise and Ride, what's that all about?
So it's interesting. So again, this Lucentis franchise is expanding. First they got wet AMD, then retinal vein occlusion, both branch and central. Results were great. Then along came Rise and Ride, which there is now 3-year data and approval from the FDA. And what shows is a couple of interesting things. First of all, with the other studies looking at the anti-VEGF agents, it looks like after 3 injections, the visual acuity tends to plateau. So you get a dramatic rise in vision and then plateauing. With Rise and Ride, which was monthly injections for 2 years, after the first 3 injections, that sort of led to this notion of a loading dose of 3 injections. But after the 3 injections here, you're only about 50 to 60% up the vision chart. You keep injecting, it keeps improving vision. The plateau doesn't really happen out all the way for 2 years. In the third year, there is a plateau. Interestingly, what they did find after 2 years is that there may be, for the first time, we've been pretty sanguine about the safety, systemic safety concerns associated with the use of anti-VEGF. We know that there is a risk with systemic use of these agents, hypertension, stroke, cerebrovascular accidents, arterial thrombolic events. There's a whole host of things that can happen. But we really thought that this low doses, we weren't seeing any real signal, but the studies were underpowered to show any signal. However, in RISE and RIDE, the clinical results, the efficacy results, were similar between the two doses studied, 0.3 and 0.5 milligram. And there was a bit of a safety signal about a slightly increased risk of stroke in the 0.5 group compared to 0.3, just that small difference in drug level that was just borderline statistically significant in this relatively small study. So that for the first time, we're now maybe paying attention. There may be a safety signal. The FDA chose, along with the company, to approve the lower dose, 0.3. For the other indications, it's a 0.5 milligram dose, so now we have a 0.3 milligram dose. But diabetics may be different. Again, many diabetics have bilateral disease, so they may be needing to get injections in both eyes. So this is a way to try to keep the drug a little safer, because for the first time, we really may be seeing a slight safety signal from what were thought to be fairly safe drugs.
Well, more to come, I guess.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's never a completely free ride.
Yeah, it's a fun time right now. A lot of stuff is going on. That's the meetings right now for retina. Every meeting, we're really learning a lot of new things.
Well, that was a wonderfully succinct summary of a lot of exciting new developments in retina that I think are of great interest to every ophthalmologist, regardless of the specialty. So I thank you very much for that great synopsis. So thanks for taking time out of your busy academy. And thanks to the audience as well for joining us. I'm Dr. Roger Steinert with Dr. Barry Cooperman for Medscape Ophthalmology.